During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Corey Anderson Beards. We head up until 2 o'clock talking some Kansas City Royals baseball. Joining us now, Royals President of Baseball Operations, Dayton Moore, here in the zone with us. Dayton, very appreciative of you joining us today and taking a few minutes out of your day. How are you, sir?
Absolutely, guys. How are you doing?
We are doing just fine. We'll start off with this because the news of yesterday and then on in today as well. And one of the reasons why, you know, people have been talking with Mike and JJ and yourself, the decision to let go of Terry Bradshaw as hitting coach. What were the reasons as to maybe why now, 32 games in, 33rd game last night, but 32 games in, why now this decision that Terry Bradshaw, there was a move that needed to be made in a different direction?
Well, I mean, as we all know, I mean, those types of decisions are very difficult. I'm not sure the timing is ever perfect. You know, to be very candid with you, as we always try to be very transparent. And, you know, JJ had spoken to me about it probably almost 2 weeks ago, just about, you know, the processes and the game planning and the preparation and, you know, the individual development plans for each and every hitter. And as we all know, one of the reasons we created this new structure in our front office was to allow JJ to be a part of the day in and day out development process of all of our players, just to make sure we were doing things on a very consistent level, using all the information that we have today to prepare our hitters, and knowing full well that we're getting ready to transition a bunch of young hitters into the major leagues over the next 1 to 3 years. And so JJ came to me and just felt that, you know, we needed to possibly look at making a change. Of course, every question that you could ask me or anybody could ask me, I began to ask of JJ and Mike, you know, we began to discuss things, different structures, different alignments, if you will. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to trust in the recommendation and knowing that it's in the best interest of what we need to do going forward. And so Alex Zumwalt, who was put into the position of director of hitting performance a few years ago prior to COVID, and that the spirit of that, the direction of that, was all about Alec overseeing the development of our hitters from the major leagues all the way down to the Dominican Summer League. And because of the interruption of our lives and the lack of people that could be on the ground working with players, we weren't really able to put that structure in place. And so, again, it's you can continue to go down the road that you've always went down. And if you continue to do that, you're going to get the same results. And so one of the phrases that I used to use when I was the director of player development with the Braves and talking to young players and talking to our staff, I'd always say the following: if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten. And, you know, so JJ, you know, convinced me that this is the right thing to do. I certainly support his decision there and understand it, and I'm going to trust in this this decision.
Do you think there was something specific that JJ or Mike Matheny wanted to see this year that was maybe different from last year, or decisions in the offseason to go and find a different, you know, hitting coach? Because at least the information now is this is temporary for Zumwalt, that this is this year, and then there'll be another hitting coach next year. Was there something specific he wasn't seeing this year that was an expectation from not making a move in the offseason?
Well, I think, look, first of all, we're all accountable for what's, you know, for what happens, okay? And so much of this is about selection. You have to select players that understand the strike zone, can recognize pitches quickly so they don't chase, and guys that are aggressive with pitches in the strike zone so the swing and miss rates are low. I think it's very important that you understand that. I don't really think chasing power for the type of organization that we are is really helpful and something we should focus on greatly, because it's all, it, you know, power production usually comes later on in a player's career. We're oftentimes not afforded that opportunity to keep players later in their career. Plus, we all know Kauffman Stadium is one of the biggest outfields in all of baseball. The ball generally does not carry well until it starts getting warm here. April and May, it's hard to hit the ball out of the ballpark. June, July, and August, the ball will jump a little bit. And then when it gets cool in September, it's harder to hit the ball out. You know, when you look historically at what we do in spring training every year, since I've been in this organization, we lead either the Cactus League or the Grapefruit League and slugging percentage and on-base percentage and hits and batting average and all those things every year in spring training. And then we come up north and we get in the ballpark and what have you. So, and I've always tried to caution our ownership and all of our people about that, and just say, you know, let's not get overconfident by some of these inflated numbers. And so I think there's a lot of factors involved with some of, you know, our struggles offensively. But at the end of the day, we've got to do a much better job of recognizing pitches, limiting our chase percentage, and making sure that we're swinging at the right pitches in the zone, and we're taking our walks, of course, and we're doing the things offensively that you have to do to win in this ballpark, and that's going first to third on the bases, scoring from second, taking your walks, making sure your situational hitting is consistent, and like I said before, not striking out.
Visiting with Dayton Moore, he's Royals president of baseball operations, joining us here in the zone. With the Bradshaw move yesterday, does that mean that, you know, Cal Eldred's job is now more of a focus in what the pitching staff looks like and development of young pitchers, if the hitting aspect has been addressed from the, you know, coaching standpoint, that the pitching stand, a side of it now can be more of a focus in whether that needs to be addressed or not?
Well, I think it's always a focus. And, the most important thing is you have committed people who are all collaborating and working together to find the proper result, the desired outcome that we all expect. And, when you're working with young pitchers, I mean, there's a lot of ups and downs that we all understand and recognize. It's no different than when we build a world championship team. We first signed and developed the young hitters, and then we traded for and signed veteran pitchers. No different than the way the Cubs did it. The Cubs, mm-hmm. In fact, Theo Epstein was quoted, I think in 2015 or 16, said they tried to model it after what the Royals did. And they signed high school young hitters, and then they went and acquired veteran pitchers through free agency and trades, et cetera. And that's how we did it as well. And then knowing that the landscape was changing, the economics of the game become more challenging, in 2018, we decided to, knowing that, making an advanced decision that we were going to draft and try to sign as many college pitchers as we could, because our opportunity to acquire pitching in free agency, veteran pitching, or trade for veteran pitching, those types of opportunities are lessening throughout the industry. And so, you know, we wanted to get a lot of young college pitchers into the farm system and develop them. Cal Eldred was with those guys all the way through the minor leagues when they first joined the system. And so there's a relationship that was acquired there. And we continue to try to, you know, capitalize on that and that trust level, because we knew these hiccups are going to occur. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you look at the development of a Brady Singer or a Chris Bubich or a Carlos Hernandez and knowing what we know now, and you can look at the, their progression through the minor leagues, none of them have hardly pitched in AAA. We skipped that process. They were at either the alternate site in Carlos and Chris's case, or, you know, we took those college pitchers with the good makeup and toughness and aggressiveness and the spirit to compete, and we put them in the major league setting during the COVID time, if you will, with, and you know, we're trying to develop them at the major league level, and so we're continuing to try, you know, to do that. Now, you know, two of those pitchers have been sent back down to AAA. Brady Singer is going to come up today. I think he's doing the things we need him to do. He's making progress, and I expect him to pitch really, really well today. And I think that if we would add, you know, two and a half weeks more of spring training, Brady would have probably ironed some things out and probably been in our rotation to start the season. But we weren't afforded that. We had to play the cards that we were dealt. And so, but we're always focused on our processes and what we can do to get better. And you're looking at Daniel Lynch. Is Daniel Lynch a better pitcher today than he was this time last year? The answer is yes. And so he is making progress. That doesn't mean that he's not going to continue to have ups and downs. I mean, I look at, you know, Clayton Kershaw's the start of his career with the Los Angeles Dodgers. He was a 500 pitcher the first few years of his career. I look at Hall of Famers Glavine and Smoltz and what they experienced the first part of their career. I look at Adam Wainwright, who broke into the major leagues as a reliever and wasn't, you know, a star pitcher until, you know, a few years into it. So it does take time. Patience is required. I mean, I look at the Chicago White Sox, the team that we're playing right now, one of the biggest markets in all of sports, seven straight years of losing seasons. In a climate where they did go out and try to sign free agents and were and signed some, but tried to sign a lot, but couldn't because of the supply and demand, and you know, now 7 years later, they're in a position or that they're, you know, they're winning baseball games, but it does take time, and I know that's hard for us all to live through. It's very difficult for, you know, our entire front office to go through and our coaching staff. But that's where we just got to continue to collaborate and work for solutions for one another.
Visiting with Dayton Moore, Royals president of baseball operations, you mentioned some of those pitchers, the Kershaw and Glavine and Smoltz and guys like that in comparison to Singer, Bubich, Lynch, and Kowar. The drafting of college guys would, in theory, mean a quicker progression and maybe quicker development and being more of the pitcher at 24, 25, 26 that you would hope they would be in Major League Baseball, because the players you mentioned all made their debuts at either 20 or 21 years old. So those first 3 years of their careers, whereas, you know, guys who were 20, 21, 22 years old, whereas, you know, Bubich turns 25 in August, Singer turns 26 in August, Daniel Lynch is 25 right now. The first 3 years of these guys' careers, 25, 26, 27, as opposed to that. The difference there, I think, would be brought up between the high school guys and the college guys, that at least in theory, Dayton, the development of the college guys would be on a faster track than some of the high school guys, correct?
Well, there's no way to create a major league model in the minor leagues. I mean, you have to face major league hitters if you're going to learn to get major league hitters out. Mm-hmm. You have to be in that environment. And I would ask you and to this question, and if you were sitting around, you know, our boardroom and our draft room, et cetera, are players today more experienced, more mature, more developed, more equipped to compete today than they were during that era? And some would say yes, some would say no. It's different for all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that's the wonderful thing about our game and the thing that continues to stimulate us and keep us interested in the game. I mean, there's no one formula that fits all. I mean, last year, if you look at what Chris Bubich was doing the second half of the season, I mean, you would expect him to be pitching much better than he did to start the season. Mm-hmm. And the way he threw in spring training, he was very good. The data proves it all. It's not just the experienced scouting eye, if you will. I mean, the data backs all of that up. When Brady Singer first broke into the major leagues, I mean, everybody was saying he's the next Tim Hudson, and the stuff is still there. Look, what I would tell you and what I really believe with all my heart and all my DNA, as long as these guys stay healthy, and they stay positive, and of course the health is the most important part of this thing, they're going to be very successful major league pitchers, pitchers that get, you know, 8 to 10 to 15 years of major league service time in whatever role that may be. Mm-hmm. But making sure they stay healthy, make sure they stay positive is really the most important part of that. And a guy like Cal Eldred is such an encourager, and those guys love working with him. And there's a relationship there that's really, really important. I mean, look at Brad Keller. Brad Keller was a double-A rule draft out of the Rule 5. He was unprotected, and Cal Eldred wanted him. Cal Eldred handpicked him. Cal Eldred came alongside of him and has helped him turn into a very good emerging major league starter. And you look at his age. I mean, he's still very, very young. Daniel Lynch. You look at the improvement of Daniel Lynch. So look. You're going to have in this game and in this life, we're all going to have our share of successes and our share of failures. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is, you know, you have people around, you know, our players and our pitchers that are positive and are working hard every day to find good solutions and are collaborative and taking the advice of others and trying to get it right.
Dayton Moore is our guest. This may be more of a philosophical question or philosophy in terms of developing players and acknowledging that it's going to be more individual cases. But one of the things that when you were hired, I believe it was an interview with Seren Petro and Nate Bucati, and it was about the AAA development, that it was important and vital, that the development of pitchers, that AAA had to be a big part of that.
But for hitters too, you know, right. For hitters too. Yeah.
But like Singer, Bubich, and Lynch, you know, didn't throw a pitch in AAA.
Right.
Is that
right.
Still part of the philosophy of that AAA?
Yeah,
needs to be a
it
big
is.
Part of it.
It is. It is. And you know, like I said, I mean, there you have to make adjustments based on your circumstances. Mm-hmm. And you know, when in part of the decision and putting those players on the major league team was, you know, we had a 60-game season during COVID, and we felt that it was the best opportunity for them to develop at the major league level versus the alternative site when they're just facing each other in sim games, and there's not even, you know, 9 players on the field, and there's no you know, it's just all sim games. It's live BPs, basically. And so we felt that was the best way to do it. One, because we really believed in their makeup. We knew that their pitch quality wasn't consistent enough. Their stuff was good enough, but mm-hmm. just the consistency to execute pitches. And we took a chance. We took a chance, and I'm responsible for that. You know, Carlos Hernandez wasn't even at the alternate site. He started that COVID year in Arizona. We brought him to the alternate site. I happened to go over there one day. I saw him throw 5 innings. He pitched really, really well. He's on the 40-man roster. We had expanded rosters, and you know, I told Mike, I said, "Look, let's get this guy up here and let's put him in the bullpen." Because he's not scared. He has power to his pitches. Let's give him a taste of it as well. He's on the 40-man roster, and he did really, really well. And last year, you know, he was one of our better starters. And you know, he's going to be a very good major league pitcher at some point in time. Whether he ends up staying in a major league rotation, I hope he does. But similar to Wade Davis, you know, I think he could be a dominant reliever if indeed we decide to alter his path. But we're going to try him as a starter first. And so, but yeah, those are good questions. Those are great questions. Those questions should be asked. And those questions are the same questions we ask of each other constantly. But again, I took a chance on those guys, and I think we'll be rewarded for it. In the future, it's a little messy right now. It's a little, you know, frustration sets in for all of us. But I think we'll be rewarded for it at the end, that they've got this necessary experience. And it's just like I told Brady Singer when he sat down. I said, "Brady, I'm just going to tell you right now, there's no guarantee you'll ever pitch in the major leagues again." And I said, "How do you feel right now?" and he shared his feelings. And I said, don't ever, ever lose that feeling, what that's like, because you can draw strength from that right now, this very moment, for the rest of your career. And I said, Brady, there's no guarantee you ever be back here. You never take this for granted. And, you know, we live in an era right now, at least in the baseball world, and maybe it relates to many aspects of life, where we do want it quicker. It does move faster. We tend to push people a little quicker at times. Of course, we all want to see players and people do well. But, you know, there's a maturing process that has to take place in all aspects, in your career, my personal life, your personal life. And, you know, it's the same thing with the players. And, look, at the end of the day, we're going to stay positive. We're going to expect good things to happen. And now we got to go make them happen. Mm-hmm. And we got to just stay focused on what we're doing. And like I said, I think we'll be rewarded for those patients and these growing pains, you know, in the end, just like we were in the past.
Yeah. Now, the COVID year is a good point about the development and guys, you know, going to that level in AAA. Dayton Moore is our guest. And along those lines of what you were talking about there, there has been, you know, conversation and criticism, and I don't know if you hear the conversation and criticism from fans, media, analysts on the struggles to develop pitching organizationally from the minors to the big leagues. If I don't know if you hear that or not, and if so, is that a fair criticism of the organizational sort of struggles to develop pitching overall compared to maybe some other organizations?
Look, this is how I look at criticism, okay? And I don't want to get too philosophical on you, but I look at criticism the following way. Criticism comes in two ways. It comes with a critical eye or a critical spirit. I'm thankful for all aspects of criticism as long as it's coming from a critical eye, because that helps you uncover blind spots, that shapes you, that molds you. I want to be criticized in ways that help us move forward, okay? And so we certainly encourage that within our organization. There's no yes men or yes women around me or any of the people in leadership positions. We want to discuss things in a very honest way. Self-evaluation is how you get better. But there are people and others that look at us all, you and me, each and every day, with a very critical spirit. And I've learned I can't please them. And so I don't even really try. Whatever I do will never be good enough. And so I've learned to just differentiate between the two. But I think you can learn from all types of criticism. You can learn where it's coming from, what the spirit of it is, and learn to rise above it, but also, you know, be open-minded that, what someone is saying can help you. And so there's many a day, well, I'll ask Ryan LaFever or other, a lot of people not associated with the Major League team, casual fans, what are you seeing? Baseball is to be enjoyed and celebrated and to discussed amongst all of our fans and all of our people. And, you know, and so I appreciate all different types of perspectives and I seek them out mm-hmm. constantly because I want to talk baseball. I'm trying to learn as well. And so, look, our community, there's no ill will within our community. Everybody wants the exact same thing. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've been criticized, rightly so, in the past, and maybe even today, is we're not transactional enough. We don't make decisions quick enough with regard to moving on from players. And the model for a small market is you should be one of the most transactional organizations in baseball. Well, we're a small market, and we're one of the least transactional organizations in baseball. Well, we've chosen to do it a certain way. And I believe the more you stay with people and the more you believe in people, you make that chain so strong and so tight and so together, and so when it is time to win, there's nothing that's going to phase you, and there's going to be no quit, and you went through all the hardships and all the challenges, and it makes you stronger when it comes time to really win and to reach your fullest potential. And so, but you know, we do understand, and I do respect the fact that people have said you need to be more transactional. You need to make decisions on coaches or players sooner than later. And you know, we were criticized quite a bit for, you know, whether it be Mike Moustakas or Alcides Escobar or Eric Hosmer even. Why don't you send him down? Or how come you haven't traded, you know, why would you keep Salvador Perez? Why wouldn't you trade Salvador Perez? Well, I think there's more to it than just, you know, whether the team's winning or in a stage to win or lose. I think there's more to it. Alex Gordon, why would you sign Alex Gordon to an extension? I mean, those are things that are fair questions. Mr. Glass asked me those questions, and he should ask those questions. But again, it's not personal by any means. I mean, it's just that's the beauty of baseball and the beauty of sports. We should all feel free to discuss it. And at the end of the day, I've learned to, you know, just to learn from both. Critical eye, critical spirit, where's it coming from? Thankful for those that look at it with a very critical eye.
Visiting with Dayton Moore, and no doubt that you mentioned critical eye for yourselves or even looking around and studying other teams in Major League Baseball and what they have done in minor leagues and onto the big leagues and the development overall. Do you feel like the pitching development in your organization is on par with the success rates of some of the other organizations? Is it lacking? Is it falling behind of some of the others in terms of guys that are developing into whether they're really good relievers or, you know, middle of the pack or even frontline starters that maybe some other organizations are able to develop?
Well, I think we all struggle with that balance, and we go through phases where, you know, we're seeing it good and we're hitting it right, and you know, I spoke last spring training, for example. When you're in spring training, you see almost every baseball executive and every scout that is in a key leadership position in this game. And all they ever talked about was how rich our organization was in pitching and how are you guys doing it. And we were receiving a lot of accolades, and now it seems like, you know, we're going through a phase because some guys haven't broke through at the major league level on a consistent basis yet, and we're receiving, you know, the opposite end of that. And I understand that, but we are continually, you know, trying to come together and use all the necessary information, all the avenues that we have to develop players and to give players information. We're utilizing them to the best of our abilities. And we all have, you know, much of the same information. I mean, people like to talk about Jake Junis. We were telling Jake Junis for 3 years, you got to throw your slider 60, 70% of the time. And he just wouldn't commit to it. Why? Well, he had a lot of outside forces in his ear and telling him what he needed to do to reach, you know, arbitration and to become a free agent, and this is what he's got to do, and this is how he's... Plus, his general health, shoulder, elbow, other things that you can't really talk about was prohibiting from him to doing, you know, certain things and committing to certain... I mean, so there's... You can take any situation, and you can... use it to whatever your advantage or whatever narrative that you're trying to create. I mean, you know, our scouts were the ones that recognized Jake Junis and gave him $600,000 out of high school and gave him an opportunity to play pro ball and gave him a full ride scholarship to the college of his choice. And so, you know, we celebrate the fact that, you know, he's doing better. We want him to do better, but there's so many different factors involved with it. But again, you know, right now we're in the process of developing plans for a pitching lab in Surprise, Arizona, a $10 to $14 million facility that we're creating with our performance science. And so we are very forward thinking of what we're trying to do going forward to meet the needs of all of our players and take advantage of their development. And, you know, it's more important today than ever before. There's minor league contraction. There's round reduction. There's 180 players is all we get. That's what the Yankees get. That's what the Dodgers get. I don't like to continue to harp on that, but it's fundamentally wrong for the development of players and the future of franchises that are in small markets, because there is a talent pool that we are simply eliminated from, and it's called high-end free agency. We are unable to get involved with that, and it's not an excuse. It just is what it is. But we have to find other solutions, and we've got to develop our players as well or better than anybody else, and continue to try to use the information we have to get better, and that's what we're trying to do.
The you mentioned Junis with the slider. There's been a lot of conversation about Brady Singer and a changeup. Has that been some of the same conversations of trying to develop that and willingness to throw it maybe from his standpoint?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and we are. I mean, but you know, Brady Singer hasn't been able to throw a changeup since he was 14. He's never thrown a changeup well. He's never thrown it on a consistent basis. So it's a feel pitch. It requires a lot of repetition, as we know. And so what do we need to do? Well, we're going to continue to – he certainly needs – with his current arsenal, a third pitch is really, really important. That being said, we've all seen major league pitchers that have one dominant pitch or two dominant pitches and as long as they command them and they have some deception, can go deep into games. And so the one thing I would tell our staff and share this with you and our fans, let's not focus so much on the weakness of a pitcher or a player where we don't continue to we don't continue to stay with what works for them, and we keep their strength strong. And let's not work so much on the weaknesses where we lose their strengths. And so, yes, we have to focus on the changeup. And he threw more changeups in the minor mm-hmm. leagues. And there goes back to a very important question, a question that should be answered, should be asked, and needs to be answered. So if Brady Singer would have spent time in AAA, he would have been forced to use his changeup and develop better. And so, again, that comes back to, a decision that I made ultimately through the recommendations of many, but ultimately made to allow him to be on the major league team without three quality pitches. Now, the pitchers, if there's 30 major league games today and there's 30 major league starters, any starting pitcher that throws three pitches from a consistent slot with command and a consistent delivery is probably going to pitch in the 7th, 8th inning. They're going to pitch 7, 8 innings today. And so when you don't have your best stuff and your best command, you have to be able to have the toughness and the competitiveness and the pitchability to go 5, 6, 7 innings without that best stuff. And that takes more experience, takes more competence to do that. Therein lies, you know, some of the issues that we have, is just the experience. But I mean, there's just a lot of things involved with that. But yes, three pitches for a starter is really, really important. It's just like I was talking to a young college pitcher this past week, a pitcher for this year's draft, and I was talking to him, and I was talking to his family, and we were talking about the difference between college baseball and minor league baseball. And so, you know, when you college pitching, college is all about winning, winning, winning. And then in the minor leagues, we're talking about development, development, development. And so we're going to script out what you need to do on that specific night, how many fastballs we want you to throw and down and away, four seam, how many sliders we want you to throw, how many curveballs, how many changeups, and, you know, talking about maybe the development of a changeup. Maybe 0-0, you're going to throw a changeup every single time you face a hitter 0-0. So if it's a ball, okay, the count's 1-0. But you're at least going to throw one changeup or one curveball to every single hitter, and we're going to do it 0-0. And just so that, you've got some room for error and some wiggle room to get that hitter out. And so it's just but those are the processes you have to go through. And, so that's kind of, what we're trying to do with all these guys.
A couple quick ones for you. Dayton Moore is our guest. You've been gracious with your time. I really appreciate it. You mentioned some trades and being more transactional for smaller market teams. Do you foresee a trade in the near future where a bigger trade or one that hurts to be able to get where you want this team to go and sort of cap off or complete what you feel like is a team that can win a division or can, win a pennant and go to another World Series?
Yeah, there's no doubt we'll have to do that. I mean, we have to utilize our farm system not only to graduate and transition players to the major leagues, championship caliber type players, but we also have to use our farm system to acquire major league talent. We have to be able to do that. And that goes back to the limit of 180 players in your minor league system. I mean, it makes it more and more difficult for teams to want to do trades. And then you start looking at players that play a premium position, catcher, shortstop, center field. If they are middle of the order or top of the order bats, we have to develop them. We're never going to be able to acquire them via free agency. And it's going to be very difficult to get them in trades unless you're willing to overpay. And it's just like, you know, when we acquired Alcides Escobar and Lorenzo Cain, I mean, obviously we had a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher that allowed us to get those two players. And both of those players were viewed as just defensive-type players. No one really viewed them as any offensive-type talent at all. And you know, they're both still playing in the major leagues. They're aging, of course, but those premium position players continue to get opportunity, and they're the ones that have the long-standing careers historically.
Visiting with Dayton Moore, and last one for you. You know, there's been a lot of talk about ballpark and downtown, or staying in the position where you're at. When the organization puts forward a proposal, It seems like it would be a tough ask to have the residents of Kansas City help finance a new ballpark for a struggling club or one that's having trouble attracting fans. Do you feel a sense of urgency with that, maybe from the higher ups, that, you know, if the timeline is increased a little bit of when that proposal or when the ask comes for the residents to help finance a ballpark downtown, that there should be a winning product on the field and fans in the stands?
Well, that's a great question, and how I've always viewed that is, whatever's best for our community. If we feel like a downtown stadium helps the growth of our community, the improvement of our city, the health of this environment and this great city of Kansas City, then it should be something we look at. If we don't think that a downtown stadium is beneficial to our community, the growth of our community, the future of your children and grandchildren and future generations. And if we don't think that that's important, a baseball team, whether they're winning or losing, should have nothing to do with that, in my opinion. As long as the bases are 90 feet and it's 60 feet 6 inches, and who knows, they're probably going to change that soon. Who knows the way a lot of the things change in this game. I mean, I've always been happy wherever we are. I believe the game of baseball brings so much to our society, the growth of leaders and the environment and the love of community and the overall environment of your city. And I think it's a special to be able to have a major league team in Kansas City to enjoy the best players in the world 81 dates a year. And so, but I think the overall viewpoint of that, truthfully, in my opinion, is similar to what we looked at, and I'm not involved in the day-to-day discussions of the politics and the future planning of our city, but very similar to when we looked at the airport. Some people felt we needed a new airport, some people felt we did not. My viewpoint, very simplistic, as long as there's a runway and you're able to get on the plane, you can get from point A to point B. But that's my point of view. But that being said, whatever we feel is best for our community, what's best for the entire sports world in Kansas City, and the future economy of Kansas City, the quality of life in Kansas City, because the decisions that you and I make today, whether we realize it or not, whether we think about it as in depth as we should, are affecting our children and our grandchildren. They're affecting the future. So every decision is important. Every decision should be weighed with its necessary importance. And I know that that's what John Sherman and the people involved with that process will do. Look, nobody's going to ever suggest anything or want to do anything that they don't think's in the best interest of Kansas City. Not what's in the best interest of the Kansas City Royals. What's in the best interest of Kansas City? What's in the best interest of our community? The health of our community, the future of our community, the future of our city, the future of jobs and housing and what's productive for future families of this community. And if a downtown stadium is a part of that, that would be wonderful. If not, that's wonderful too.
Dayton Moore, Royals President of Baseball Operations. Dayton, very gracious with your time. I appreciate it for taking some time out. I know you're a busy man. So thank you for joining us and talking some baseball and the Royals organization and where it's currently sitting right now. So I really appreciate that and hope you have a good day. And hopefully the Royals get back on the winning track and we're talking about a lot more positive things and maybe what the playoff tickets look like.
No, we will. I appreciate the time as well and appreciate all you guys do. Thank you.
Thank you, Dayton. There's Dayton Moore, Royals President of Baseball Operations, joining us here in the zone. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling, and we'll talk about a number of things that were brought up there from Dayton Moore. More Zone right after this at Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Jacob Junis is comparable to Mariano Rivera. I'm happier than a pig in shame that this guy is here for his entire career because he's my favorite player ever.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Corey Anderson, Beards. Les Norman. Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City, and HMH Autosport. Mention Sports Radio 810, get 10% off your service bill. We're going to talk with him at noon, even though he's sitting right here as well.
Snuck in, man.
Yeah, he's right here. You are early. That's how you get the big bucks. You show up early. You're Tom Coughlin-ing it. Tom Coughlin-ing it. If you're 10 minutes early, you're 5 minutes late.
Way to slow that down, buddy.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I've been sitting in the parking lot listening to the Dayton Moore interview. Yeah.
You could have come in.
I know, but I
wanted to let you.
But I also had some other research to do too. I got a really cool guest coming in to do some research and
there you go.
Be prepared for that. But it was interesting.
There's a lot to unpack.
Yes, and some good questions.
Well, thank you. A lot to unpack and take away and certainly some meat on the bone. I hate to just ask hey, what'd you hear? What'd you take away? Because we ended up keeping him 38 minutes, which wasn't the plan. And I hope the Royals aren't too frustrated in that. But I had about 15 things I wanted to ask him. We got to about 9. But you always leave things on the cutting room floor.
I'll tell you this. They were listening. I know they were listening because I got a text from Sam Mellinger.
Said, okay.
Yep, we're listening now. I was thanking him for setting it up. So he could have texted me at any point said, hey, Dayton's got this. Wrap it up. So.
Yeah.
There was an open line of communication where we could have wrapped up. So he was free and available and ready to answer the questions you had.
Right, and he obviously wasn't trying to shorten up his answers.
Yeah.
He was very gracious and extended his answers, and
so
we appreciate that.
A lot of the questions going into today, and really yesterday when Terry Bradshaw news came out, is what about Cal Eldred? What are we seeing from the pitching staff? Why, if it is Terry Bradshaw, that something was not happening the way they wanted it to happen, that they needed to make the move, but Cal Eldred doesn't seem like there is even a question of his job security or job performance at this point. J.J. Piccolo said yesterday that they aren't even thinking and discussing Cal Eldred, and it didn't sound like in anything Dayton Moore said about the pitching staff, the development of pitchers, and Cal Eldred specifically, that is something they are looking into right now in a new pitching coach.
Well, old farts like me and guys that have been covering the Royals for years in the media, like you guys, you've been doing it, you've been seeing it. You were young and in Kansas City before you were out the Louisville, so you've been here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dayton and JJ and those guys have only been in this regime. They've only been during this time. And so, one, they're going to back their guy in that area. The hitting coach is always the first to go. Unless there's some crazy circumstances, the hitting guy is going to go. Terry Bradshaw, as soon as another year of or worsening of the output, especially with the analytics that go into hitting now, the writing was on the wall, man. He had a bullseye on his back, whether it was public knowledge or not. And even though I'm not saying they were saying that internally, the statistics and lack of production put the bullseye on the hitting coach's back. Seitzer, bang, gone. You know, now he's got a World Series ring. But that's just was going to happen. And so I feel like with Cal Eldred, and you heard Dayton talk about how he has a relationship with those young guys. And so they're not even talking about it and thinking it. Now, on our side, we have been talking about how long the history of the Royals have been not developing these young guys. I mean, there was a string. We talked about the string of first-round pitchers that just didn't do anything. They didn't develop. And so we're continuing to see that. It's just that this generation with Dayton, with JJ, they're not a part of that past. And so they're going to see things a little bit differently. Over time, if it continues, they're going to have to talk about it. We see it maybe a little bit differently. But again, if they don't see it that way and they're not talking about it, we got to get used to the fact that he's going to be here for a while. Dramatic pause.
Well, I'm just...
Big deep breath, dramatic pause.
Well, no, I mean, there was a commercial break just to assess everything of that came from all of that.
Still need more time on that, too.
Yeah, I mean, but because here's the deal. Like, the pitching staff is not meeting what expectations should be overall. And Terry Bradshaw was, it feels like a sacrificial lamb this early in the season that... somebody's got to pay the price for what's going on through 32 games in the season. And they had talked about it happening 10, 12 days ago is what JJ Piccolo said yesterday. About 10 or 12 days ago is when we first started to discuss that. I also got the indication that if Dayton Moore were the GM right now and JJ Piccolo were in his position, Terry Bradshaw would still be the hitting coach.
Agreed.
That's what it sounded like to me, that he said, quote, he had to convince me this is the right move.
Yeah. That stuck out to me, too.
Yeah, and I don't know if that means that it's a, okay, you can make the move on Bradshaw, but Cal Eldred ain't going anywhere for one reason or another, but I don't think Terry Bradshaw's fired if J.J. Piccolo and Dayton Moore are in the roles they were a year ago.
That could possibly be true, but I don't think that he was a sacrificial lamb because of the massive amount of statistics that they use. So you guys tell me, how much more, when you're looking at production from the team is a offensive side to the collective, not just one pitcher, but the collective pitching side, both failures, both have not been very good, obviously. And so you're talking about exit velocity. You're talking about one and one count. You're talking about walks. Dayton really talked about swing and miss. And I do love the fact that he put that on the hitters, that they're not just drafting power guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they use more analytics on the hitting side than they do on the pitching side, and therefore it makes it easier to let the hitting instructor go, or the hitting coach go.
They are developing plans for a pitching lab.
Yep.
In Arizona, $14 million pitching lab that will study all of the different things. I think you do that when you look yourself in the mirror and say, what are we doing wrong that everybody else is doing right? What do we need to assess? What do we need to be better at? And maybe it's 5 years too late. I mean, it's never wrong to come to the right conclusion eventually. Just because it may have taken a little longer time, it doesn't mean that then they shouldn't do it at all. I'm happy that they're doing that, and I'm happy they restructured the development on the hitting side throughout the minors a couple of years ago, because it is paying dividends, and now the pitching side, maybe it'll start paying dividends.